Welcome to the Coaches Forum by These Football Times, a podcast for the progressive football coach, the inquisitive mind, and the lifelong learner for all things football, with your host, John Townsend.
All right, welcome to the Coaches Forum hosted by These Football Times. Today I'm joined by Ray Power, who has been kind enough to take time out to share a lot of the stuff that he's learned as a coach, and he's the author of quite a few books and written topics, and he's what I call a coach's coach, so somebody that helps people like myself do a lot of the work that I like to do when I get into my coaching circles. Ray, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for that little intro. I've never been called a coach's coach before, I don't think. I appreciate that. I'll take that with me.
Okay, well, yeah, it's a compliment. I know that sometimes as coaches, we just think of players and we think of our audience as the people we serve, the clubs that we work for, and the players that are on the field. And I think that each coaching journey is incredibly unique and incredibly personal. And I use the term, it's circumstantial. I think people fall into coaching or they find it through a variety of different means.
Right.
And I think most of us probably started out as players or fans of the game, and then coaching sort of consumed us in some weird, strange way. So I'd like to kick things off with your coaching journey. We'll talk about your evolution as a coach and your role as a coach and how that role evolves in modern football. But where did your journey begin, and how did you find yourself wanting to pursue coaching?
Oh, well, I probably crossed a number of the things that you just spoke about, I guess. Growing up, friends and family and friends of the family just knew me as the kid who was just obsessed with the game, obsessed with playing it. And of course, when you're young, you're not thinking about coaching, you're thinking about playing. And you play in the street, you play in the back garden, you roll the ball under your foot at dinner, and you know used a softball to play in the living room, you use a hardball to smash against the garage door or the neighbor's wall. So that was me as a kid. And obviously as you grow up and go through your teens, and as a player I never became a professional footballer. And I always kind of thought I could have, but looking back with my coach's hat on now, I certainly wasn't good enough, I don't feel. So that kind of late teenage years, I did the university route and stayed in education rather than going off into professional football. And I missed it. You know, I qualified as a teacher out of university. I started teaching and working in Switzerland, and I love teaching. And to be honest, I consider myself a teacher on the football pitch. I know that's something you wanted to talk about later anyway. And I missed the game. And I remember quite a number of times waking up as a school teacher, you know, suit and tie, in the classroom, and thinking, you know, I need to pursue this football stuff, because that's me. That was who I was. I wasn't the school teacher, or I wasn't some other professional. I was a football guy some way, somehow. So I suppose I quit while I was young enough and uncommitted enough to mortgages and kids to make a transition. And yeah, went on a journey like anyone else through coaching badges and various levels of experience and levels of the game. And don't regret a second of it.
It's funny. I was talking to a colleague not too long ago, and they were mentioning how every young boy before the reality sets in should ask themselves this question, which is, how would you coach yourself? If, you know, you as a coach, assessing you as the player, and you mentioned something, is, you know, you're looking at it through the coaching lens. You can kind of see the game through a different perspective, maybe a more pure perspective in many ways, where it's like, well, okay, I'm not playing, but now I'm looking at it from a different angle, and you get a different story out of that. And I think that is a very valuable lesson. The conversation went to, when did you decide to hang up the boots for me? And I said, well, I didn't decide. The game told me. And it wasn't a personal thing. It was very much, this is the ceiling. And now if you want to continue on in this trajectory, you are going to have to go on the other side of the white lines. And yep. And again, for me, I fell into it. It wasn't something I pursued, but I think once I committed to it, I can really empathize with what you just said, is I'm going to commit to this. I'm going to study this, improve myself in a variety of different ways. And we'll get into ways that you've helped other coaches do that throughout the years. But I mentioned this term, the modern football coach. And I think that the requirements of the modern coach are dramatically different than the coaches that we had as young players. Mm-hmm. And I think the tools and the platforms and the resources are obviously much more advanced and available now. What do you think there are requirements or demands that the modern game places on people who are pursuing coaching and who are currently coaching? How does that factor into your coaching? Like, you know, what have you seen that has helped, and what have you seen that has possibly hindered coaches these days?
Look, I think coaching has changed so much. Even, and I didn't start coaching all that long ago. You know, it was in the kind of the mid-2000s. So you're talking, you're probably talking a decade and a half, actually. That sounds a little bit longer than I anticipated. But it's changed dramatically since then. And then it's certainly changed from when I played and I was coached as a young player. You know, to have a platform like the one you guys run, for example, podcasts like the one we're talking on, Twitter, the amount of resources and sharing and best practice and books and videos and YouTube series and webinars, it is a feast of football coach development that's available out there. And available, it's not for the top 1% either. It's available for everyone. So that's, you know, that's a big, big change in coaching for sure. There's far more of a learning approach, if that's the right grammar to use. There's certainly many, many more coaches out there that are more willing to invest their time in their craft and to improve their coaching in any way they can. And I'm not talking about paid guys necessarily. I'm talking about, I run a mentor program, and I have mentees that are, for example, one's a dad with a D license who's working with his son's under 10 team, and another couple of mentees work at academy level with young professional players. So there's quite a range, and that's certainly massively changed the landscape of coaching. Maybe there is some secrets, but it's not quite the closed shop that it used to be.
In talking about this, well, I call it almost a paralysis by analysis age that we live in, where you mentioned YouTube and Twitter and social media and all the plethora of resources. And I think for coaches just starting their journey, it can be daunting. It can be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know for me, who I've probably been coaching seriously for about 10 years, and I still will launch into the digital space and be completely lost. And I know what I'm looking for, but I don't know how to find it sometimes. And and I think we sometimes, as members of the coaching community, need to figure out how to come together and provide a platform that streamlines a learning opportunity. And you know, you've offered something that I think is very important. It's just a 7-week football coach development program, which is open to all ages, but it's specifically for youth coaches. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, that dad who's a coach of his son's U10 team or the grassroots coach. Yeah. Where did you architect this program, and where does this fall into the times that we're living in now, where people aren't coaching because the times we live in, but they have all the time in the world to expand their knowledge and to learn and to gain information? How did you go about architecting this, and what is this program about?
Well, I'll kind of use a bit of a wide lens to start off and hopefully kind of zoom in on what we'll actually be doing on this program. Like I said before, I mentor coaches one-to-one on a weekly basis, and it started before lockdown, before any of this corona stuff started. So I've straddled both the active, you know, coach that's doing it week in, week out, and the noise that comes with all that, and I've stepped in the, you know, when it's really, really quiet, and it's been, you said earlier that every coach is individual, and it's been a different experience with each of them that have straddled the kind of busy soccer football season with the lockdown. And what I found with a number of the guys was that, and it was through nobody's fault, and I'm as probably a bigger problem as anyone else on Twitter and YouTube and all that, was exactly what you said. The volume just became overwhelming, and there was good coaches and guys that I mentor who were invested in the coaching just really kind of panicking because they weren't able to read a couple of books a week. They weren't able to jump on every which webinar. They just couldn't. It was a little bit whack-a-mole. Just every time they hit one mole, another one popped up, and it just became too frantic. So what the program that I'm running, the concept was, especially in these times, was let's not jump around webinars, as good as they may be. Let's not create a situation where we jump on a webinar, our question may or may not get answered, and it kind of, the learning flies away in the wind. This was going to be structured over a period of time where you could book on. We'll jump on Zoom like everyone is doing at the moment, and we'll do some structured work over a number of weeks. That is, yes, there may be X amount of people there with you, but it's very individual to you as well. And let's really try to create a community that works together, that helps, that shares on a personal level, you know, beyond a Twitter handle and a little bit of advice that you may or may not get if you send someone a tweet. If you can imagine the culture and the environment, if you could imagine the best coaching course you've ever been on, or maybe even the best education course you've ever been on, not necessarily because of the tutor or the content, but because of everyone else in the room. I'm a big believer that's if you have a room full of coaches, whether they're D license or A license or pro license, that everyone has a certain skill set and a certain set of strengths and weaknesses that can be complemented by other people in the room and other willing people who are willing to help. The program is kind of split into a webinar, kind of a little bit of a university chalk and talk situation, where I will deliver a webinar around a topic to get us going. But then the kind of real learning begins after that, where we splinter off into smaller groups and dissect some of the webinar, dissect some of the reading lists that we've produced. And then we go further, where we buddy up one-to-one for periods of time with other coaches on the program. So if you, John, if one of your weaknesses, and I'm going to use the word weakness because for the sake of semantics, I think a little bit, but if your coaching weakness was your tactical knowledge, for example, and my coaching strength was my tactical knowledge, then we would buddy up and I would teach you about tactics or a certain part of tactics, and maybe you would teach me about psychology or whatever the case may be. And it's really interesting, as the numbers have really swelled over the last couple of weeks, and the varying amount of expertise that's coming into this room is phenomenal. You know, whether they're taking that expertise from their job or from their coaching or their experience or their life or their attitude or the country they were born in, it's just and you know, all being well, it'll come alive in a, not just in a Zoom room, but in many, hopefully, WhatsApp calls or whatever after that. That just coaches trying to improve coaches and kind of clear some of the noise that a lot of people are experiencing from the plethora of stuff out there.
That sounds fantastic. I think my biggest weakness about approaching coaching when I can't actually go coach is I see a lot of information being shared, and then a lot of it is the urge to share the information but not really explain what you've just shared or how you've come about it or where you could apply it to your own team. I think I'm just as guilty as everybody else of finding this great drill that Jurgen Klopp does or Pep Guardiola does or Diego Simeone, and then all of a sudden it looks fantastic on paper. It looks even better with the animation and the coaching platform tools. Then it looks even better on YouTube or on the TV screen. And then I get to the field and I set up the drill, and all of a sudden I am now in a position where I don't realize what I've just opened up in terms of what this is supposed to accomplish. And so there's a deconstruction that I think needs to happen. And I think we live in a digital age where people just share. Those dopamine hits are going crazy.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is a program that is a curriculum and a community. And I think that's really where learning takes place. And I describe good coaches as lifelong learners. I think most good coaches that I've worked with, or I used to be a teacher in a former life, they're educators. And that's kind of their calling. And It's a vocation, but it's altruistic in many ways, and it's this ability and this willingness to share what they've learned, but also to learn as they share. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's a massive crossover between coaching and education. And I think that, as you've rightly put forth in this program, but also just in your work over the years, is how does a coach simply go beyond direct instruction? I think that we sometimes are focused so much on the delivery, but not actually the message. Yeah. And that's what you see on social media, right? Here's this great drill that I have. Here's 400 drills, or here's this. How does that factor into how you approach setting up a program like this, or just your day-to-day interaction with coaches that you're mentoring?
Well, I think the problem, and maybe I'm not qualified to be the judge in all this, but I think the tradition that most coaches, when they were in education, in school or in college or whatever, in university, their education, that the focus was on the teaching. So it was always about the teacher, the assignment, the this, the that. And it rather than where hopefully we're moving to now is that we're actually considering the learning, not the teaching. So that the teaching methods doesn't really matter so long as people within it are learning. And if you use the online program as an example, I don't know if you were to do a kind of a word analysis, the word learning is probably the most used word in all the blurb and all the FAQs about it, because ultimately if learning is not the center of it, then what is, me or some other presenter? And that's getting us off on the wrong foot. Yeah, you might impart some knowledge on people, but we want to go deeper than that, and we want to create multiple layers. So, for example, with let's look at a university theatre, and you have a lecturer at the front and 100 people listening to a lecture. What tends to happen is he gives the lecture. They spend 5 or 10 minutes with a question and answer session. The learner asks the teacher the question, the teacher answers it, done, full stop. And there's nothing going deeper than that. So instead, what I'm looking to do for my part in the webinar that I will lead is create light bulbs where people want to ask certain questions. Now, everyone's light bulb will be a little bit different, but the questions don't come back to me. The questions actually go into smaller little groups some breakout rooms that we'll be creating. So I want to be the last person who gets asked the question about the webinar. I want it to go through almost every other person in the room before it comes back to me if it's still not clear and if it's still, an issue or whatever. That way we're exploring things. That way we're being creative. That way we're, if you think of your son or your daughter doing their homework or anyone in the library during exam time that's staring at the scene and scratching their head, kind of contorting their face, trying to find the answer to something. That's learning. That's deeper level learning than this sort of Q&A stuff that that we do to tidy up some of these lectures. So I wanted to go into the learning, and I almost want the webinar part that I deliver to be the worst part of the program, or the least valuable. I want the rest of it to be the real meat and drink of what we do. And I want people in 5 years' time to get in touch and say, hey, Ray, I still speak to 10 guys who were on your program 10 years ago, because, you know, we like you will do and many coaches will do from your regular coaching courses, you'll keep in touch with people. I keep in touch in a social worker from my C license. And we talk, and when we, you know, when behavior stuff comes up with my group, we talk about it. Or I remember a lawyer who was on my B license, possibly, or even might be my C license as well. Was sitting down over lunch one day talking to me about persuasion and then how to convince people and sell an idea to people and kind of argue in a friendly way, and really intriguing stuff. And then these were skills that weren't necessarily football ones or coaching ones, but definitely transfer. And if you can create a room like that where everyone's focused on learning, then, you know, we've all got a chance to move the needle in the right direction.
I think collaboration is another misused word quite a bit in the coaching community, because I think a lot of what we learned growing up with direct instruction is that the classroom were to be structured in a way where the professor or the teacher's at the front, and then we're all in rows and like a factory assembly line. I think your approach seems to be, well, let's take that focal point away and make the learning body or the room the focal point, and collaborate and, you know, communicate in that way. And it kind of leads me to my next point that I want to talk to you about, because I'm a writer myself. Like, my day job is to write professionally for a corporation and synthesize information that is technical into other types of audience-based delivery mechanisms. That sounds like a mouthful, but it's no different than with coaching. It's like you have this thing that you want to communicate, and you use the power of the pen, as I say, is you want to write something, and you've authored books and you've contributed to websites and you've used this power of the pen to convey your message and expand your knowledge. Writing is something that I feel is almost a dying art when it comes to players and coaches being able to explain and synthesize their thoughts without having to speak, having to really think through these things. What do you think about that, and where's your writing journey taken you, and how did that begin?
I'll start at the end if I can. It began as, and a little bit maybe of what people have experienced really over the last couple of weeks. It happened in 2013, where I had this idea of writing a book parked in the corner of my mind somewhere, kind of a bucket list thing. And it was the middle of the summer. And the best way I can describe it is myself and my wife had a kind of a New Year's Eve moment where we kind of reevaluated everything that was happening. And I guess I brought this idea, this writing a book idea, out of its kind of parking space and thought, right, what do I do next? What's the first step in getting this into real life? And contacted publishing companies and doing all that kind of legwork and stuff. And Benny and Kearney, thankfully, who've been brilliant to me the last number of years in terms of a writing and publishing relationship. They bit, and they bit hard, and they bit early to get on board with the idea I had for my first book, which was Making the Ball Roll. And I always wanted it to be, I'll say simple, but I think that kind of, that doesn't do it enough justice. I wanted the language to be simple. I wanted coaches to pick it up and not need a dictionary and not need Google Translate out to figure out what's being said. Because I think if the way you explain something isn't understandable, then you may as well not explain it at all for the sake of the learner. And that's the way I've always been. I think I'd read a couple of tactics books, and maybe they were translated. I think they were translated from Italian or something like that. And they just didn't. They had the translation barrier, I guess, you know, is common with books like that. And it just became a slog. It just wasn't, it was too frustrating. And I wanted to put as much as I could all in the one place for coaches to go to. So it became a little bit of a encyclopedia kind of way of working. And it's something we're going to pursue as well on the coaching program is this idea that you'll know yourself when you're writing, and certainly when you're writing to be published, you have to be, there's a certain amount of validation you need. There's a certain amount of authority you need to speak about a certain subject. So you've got to be on point. And so in a bizarre way, the teaching part of what I was doing actually became a huge learning part. So I ended up down rabbit holes during my research that I may never have gone on in normal day-to-day life. So in teaching, I became better. I learned more. You know, it's in that kind of, I don't know, juxtaposition kind of way. So yeah, I've always, I don't want to say I've always enjoyed reading. I was probably about 20, 21 when I first picked up a book and read it cover to cover. And that's been, I've got a degree and all that kind of stuff before then. But it was, as soon as I read my first football book that I engaged in, I never stopped after that. And it's just something, I think the options to read, whether it be hard books, ebooks, audiobooks, which I've kind of got a lot of use out of recently as well. I think the book is well and truly alive, because I think it gives, there's a lot of platforms, I guess, where anyone can kind of print and publish, self-publish and all that. But certainly the validation part of it it's been really, really good for me. And I suppose catapulted me into a different audience as well.
I can completely understand what you're talking about. I'm in the middle of rewriting my first book with the same publishing company that you are with, actually. And it actually has the word ball in the title. It's called It's Just a Ball, and it's exploring the complexities of a pretty simple game. And I started writing this book 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And I got so far, stopped. I was my own worst enemy as the biggest critic. And the problem is I write for a living. And so I was overanalyzing, second guessing, listening to people who didn't, really, their opinion was important, but it really wasn't. And so I'm just now using this unique time that we're in to get the rewrites complete and sent over and validated. And it's a very interesting process, because I think there's two parts about writing a book and writing in general that I tell people. And a lot of it is like coaching. The first part is committing to that process. And then the other part of that is the consistency that tends to get lost sometimes, because it is easy to go down rabbit holes or lose sight of the focal point, or completely change your, which you initially started out as doing and going in a different direction. So I think that, as I go through it, it's, I'm not there yet, but it's encouraging to hear how you have used writing to really catapult yourself into a higher sphere of learning, I guess is what
definitely. I'll say. It's made a big impact on me, and I'll admit this now because I'm no longer in the world, but when I was a newly qualified teacher, I was put in front of you'll be familiar with the term AP class in the States, which for the kind of British and non-American listeners here is kind of a really high level, second/third level academic course. And I was really wet behind the ears, and even the subject matter was unfamiliar to me. So I was literally teaching something that I didn't know about at this level. And I used to joke with some of my colleagues that I wasn't quite, drowning, but I had to stay one page ahead in the book than anyone else in the room. And while that might sound like the most unprofessional environment you could have, it kind of became something that taught me, because I was under pressure and because I had to do it. And because kids' exam results were riding on it, I just had to roll my sleeves up, and I had to, this is where I come up with to teach us to learn, because you go down and you drill down into things that normally you wouldn't, to a level that you normally wouldn't. And when you have to describe and explain something to someone else, to do that simply, you have to understand it really, really well. And ironically, we had really small classes and they were really quite good kids, and the exam results were shockingly good by the end of the year. And it was, you know, it was, you know, looking back on it, quite a funny story given how it started. But it was an immersion. So a huge part of the online program I'm doing, and even the mentorship I'm doing, the guys are quite familiar with me going, you know, not necessarily giving the answers, but going, think about this, read that, you know, try this, trial and error, guided discovery, all those things we work with players, I try to work with coaches, rather than tell and, you know, give my opinion. I will give my opinion, but it's I want you to knock it around your head before you figure out whether you're going to use it or not. But that to teach us to learn is will be quite a common theme then throughout that 7 weeks also.
Oh, I love that term. I remember being a teacher, and the first year I was a teacher, I thought it was going to be simply as I planned the lessons and the units, and then they saw right through me, and then I became almost committed to this role. But then I really wasn't, I was kind of like one page ahead of where they probably were because I was so young. And then, you know, but there's a crossover with coaching as well. I think if you aren't committed to learning the subject matter, you aren't testing yourself or seeking mentors or aligning with your own belief system. I was guilty of coaching players the way I had been coached, which is, I think, the classic first blunder, which is it must have worked for me. And I think that is a truism in all things in life. And I think when you talk about, you know, giving opinions and obviously showing and not telling, I think that forces the player or the other coach or the person in the audience or the person listening on this podcast to really think about thinking. That metacognition is a really big role in the modern coaching sphere, in my opinion, is, you know, why am I doing this? And what is the application that I ultimately want? And it's very easy to just go through the procedures, but not actually understand the outcome. And I think there's no better way to test that than, you know, looking at a body of players or, you know, coaches that are looking to you for knowledge and not really understanding it yourself. And I think that is a very valid point. And I think to teach is to learn, I think, is a very good phrase. I like that a lot.
Good. You can. I permit you to use it. Look, based on what you said right at the top of the show, I think you used the term coaching lens. And I, since actually my most recent book, I use that a lot. And maybe the slightly different meaning, but it's, we all bring our football and coaching experience to the football pitches and to the teams we work with. Everyone does, whether you're, you look at Pep Guardiola, you know, top, or even Jurgen Klopp, the top guys in coaches in world soccer, carry their experience with them from their playing days. Obviously, Guardiola is really quite obvious one of them, and Klopp is, you know, kind of a maximize your ability. You know, how do we work together to create a team that's better than the sum of its parts, and so on. So we all have this coaching lens, and it's not even a blunder, and I'll let you off the hook when you say it was a blunder how you first started coaching, because you just copied what was done with you. That was simply your coaching lens. That was simply what you thought, honestly, what you thought coaching was. And why would you think it was anything different than what had been kind of done with you for 10 or 15 years? It's only when we permit ourselves to look at the game and look at coaching through other people's lenses and look to expand our own lenses and our own experiences, and we start to bolt on loads of different skill sets and loads of different other things that we drag along with us, and are constantly, well, I would hope coaches are constantly remodeling the way they look at the game, remodeling how they coach, not ripping everything apart every few weeks, because that's no good either, but just allowing anything new they learn, allowing it to to fester and bring it out in their coaching. I think that's a really healthy way to approach not just coaching, but any kind of profession, any kind of vocation or whatever that involves you working with other people, is to allow that lens to expand.
My coaching mentor is, it's funny, he probably could have coached several levels higher than where he stayed for the past almost 50 years. And he's the winningest high school coach in the U.S. on the boys' side. And he uses a term where if you approach something in a way where you can put the ingredients in and let them kind of simmer and meld together, you're going to have more success than if you just try to approach it like a microwave. So he says this is a crock pot versus a microwave, and we're in a microwave society, but we need to be more crock pot centric, where we put things in and we stir them up and we let things heat up, and then we leave it alone, and we give ourselves some time to develop and to assess and to experiment. And I think we are very much in a results-oriented day and age, where everybody covets the result without respecting the process. Have you found that to be quite a common theme in your experience?
Very, very much. Players as well. And that's, to me, that's kind of a bit of a learning journey in itself, that understanding. I think most great athletes, and I'll use athletes, not just footballers, they tend to talk about the process, not the end result. The end result is just whatever it will be in many ways, but it's the process you control. So thinking of the great athletes, the Michael Phelps, the Roger Federer's, people like that, and the Tiger Woods, I guess, as well. It's all about that process. It's all about training that one foot in front of the other, this desire to get better. I like the analogies used by the coach you speak about, for sure. And it's, we're kind of talking the same language in a different dialect. I think that's, if you're process driven, you look for improvement. I think if you're results driven, you get a bit fixated, and you probably go from any sort of growth mindset to a fixed mindset kind of attitude. And I'm pretty sure if your process is strong, or your process is improving, then the results naturally improve anyway. If I use Pep Guardiola, as you know, no one can really argue with his win ratio, and no one can certainly argue with what he's done in terms of influence in the wider game, across three countries now, in terms of where he's been, but all over the world. He, you know, he went to Bayern Munich, and everyone said, "Oh, you can't play the Barcelona way at Munich." And he didn't necessarily. He kind of played a German version of the Barcelona way, and suddenly he was now talking about killing counter attacks, which is a very German kind of game in the Bundesliga. And then he comes to England, and he's talking about possession, and he's talking about killing counter attacks, but he's also talking about winning second balls, which is kind of a key feature of the game here. So it's, you have that constant evolution, but there's no doubt that when we see a Guardiola team, we know it's a Guardiola team. And those kind of principles and foundations are still the same. And, you know, if that type of learning and that type of self-exploration of how he's working is good enough for him, then it's definitely good enough for me and the rest of the coaching fraternity too.
Absolutely. I think this segues really nice into the sports psychology aspect of it, because that was, it was a fun story I like telling players. But I was in 2009, I was a relatively new coach, and I was running my first major marathon, and I was at the tail end of what would be considered the more elite runners. So I was fast, but I wasn't anywhere near elite. And toward the end of that race, we finished, and my body was hurting, my mind was gone, and everything like that. And I saw one of the elite marathoners crying, and which is not uncommon to do, no matter who you are, in a marathon. And a reporter had asked them, "Why are you crying? You just set a personal best." And he said, well, now what do I do? Now yeah. I have to prep for the next thing. Like, so the marathon was completely not the goal. It was, he was so in love and so dedicated to the process. Mm-hmm. The psychology about that, I think, is really resonates with coaches. When I think of, you know, Pep Guardiola is probably the best example, but just this idea and this identity and this principle that it's all iterative and it's something that doesn't come overnight. You don't just go from couch to marathon and hope to have any success. And I think the same is true with coaching. You don't just, you know, go on YouTube and see how they play and then go try to apply it. Sure. How has sports psychology and the role it plays in your life factored into delivering content and writing content mm-hmm. and setting up and architecting, I like using that phrase, architecting, mm-hmm. coaching courses and mentorships. How do you leverage sports psychology? Do you enlist sports psychologists in your own learning? And mm-hmm. has that, because it is a broad term, and I think that sports psychology sometimes encapsulates false equivalencies. Like, and I think a lot of people are watching The Last Dance with Michael Jordan and the Bulls, and they're trying to apply that to their U-12 team, and it's kind of this weird thing. And I caution people, but I also don't want to, you know, take that away from them. How do you see sports psychology fitting into your sphere?
I don't think a coach once said to me, and this guy played in the Premier League, and he was managing in the League One at the time, and his team was struggling, and I was reasonably close to the team and so on, and I kind of proposed I won't call it a psychological intervention because that sounds like kind of a mental health kind of approach to it, but I suggested a way of working or something I could do to help. And he categorically told me that he didn't believe in sports psychology. Not that it didn't, you know, he didn't like it or he didn't, you know, he had a different opinion, is that he didn't believe in it, as if it was, you know, whether you believed in aliens or not. And that was kind of conversation over. I don't think it's sports psychology per se. I just think it's psychology. It's how people behave and it's how people respond to the world. And I'm not a guru on any of this, but I just, like, if I can at all, I try to step into the shoes of those people I'm working with and say, if I was them, what's the message I want to hear? Or what's the message maybe I need to hear sometimes? And that is something that a number of years ago, I read an article about that kind of idea of being able to step into other people's shoes. And it's actually not quite a gift, but it's something that people need to learn. And I kind of took to that. And I'm always reading the room. I'm always kind of looking to pick up clues on whether what I'm doing or what I'm saying is working or not. If I don't believe what I have planned is working, I will dump it quite quickly, if that makes sense. So if you're having a team talk and it's, for example, and it's just not quite doing what it's supposed to do, I'll quite happily, you know, cut it off. But I think whether you're working with coaches, whether you're working with players, you are never not working psychologically with them, whether you know it or not. And the little simple little messages, the little and often stuff that you do when you work with players, it is the same when you work with coaches. Ultimately, people want to feel like they're doing a good job. Ultimately, people feel like, most of the people certainly that I cross want to feel like they're improving, they're getting better. And you know, anything beyond that is just simply looking at how I can help them, and it's learning and psychology and mindset and all that kind of stuff is always there, always.
I think the modern coach is really deep into motivations. And I was once having a conversation at a coaching course with the question was about motivation and how is it important with players and coaches. And someone says something pretty profound where they say, you know, if you ever go to somebody's social media page and all they have is inspirational quotes, they're usually a pretty less than happy person, because they're constantly they're sharing that, but they're not living it. And I thought that was interesting. But I do think that, you know, psychology especially in the sporting realm, is humbling in many ways too, because there's a great quote, which is that, you know, the farther in you look, the farther out you see. And I think that would be, you know, something I've learned in my coaching journey, with especially looking at who I am, how I'm wired, how I'm programmed, and how I deliver my coaching and how I learn. I think that's kind of that first, you know, you let me off the hook with the blunder, but I never did that analysis. I didn't know. And I think that's probably the other aspect of it, is we are so conditioned, at least my generation, to fear mistakes and to try to avoid looking the fool. And sometimes that actually is worse than walking through the flames and getting that baptism of under fire, if so to speak. And I'm really glad that you've mentioned that it's not just sports psychology, it's psychology. And I think, you know, how are we constructed, how are we wired, how are we, you know, what makes us tick, I think is a really important thing. I encourage coaches to write this stuff down. Like, what, you know, how do you talk to yourself? How do you, you know, what's your relationship like with yourself before you even get to the players and whatnot? But I do kind of want to shift gears here. You've got pretty extensive experience, and it's taken you to a pretty interesting place. Let's talk about your coaching journey from the perspective of your work at Sunderland's Academy and some of the stuff you've done based in the UK. And then let's get into your experience in Tanzania how did that happen? And where did that come from? And, you know, obviously, you know, everyone has this idea that they want to be part of an academy. They want to be part of a structured big system. And then some of the best coaches that I've talked to have taken an adventure and they've gone on self-exploration, of journey of self-discovery perhaps. Can you talk me through your journey as a coach?
I don't know, maybe it's not so normal, but I always consider it quite a normal pathway I took, in terms of as I got qualified beyond D license, level one, level two here in the UK, and B license, A license, As I worked up through the qualifications, I kind of worked up through the game at the same time. So I started off working voluntary, and then it was community work with kids that were, you know, had certain issues, whether it be in school or socially or something like that, where you're coaching a different kind of element of the game, but you're still employed in that world. And then you head into B license, A license territory, where some full-time roles open up to you, and opportunities in academies and so on start to flourish. So I kind of went on the voluntary to community to part-time academy to full-time academy to academy management kind of, and then into coach education, all that, and writing obviously as well. So I kind of, maybe the last couple of years I've been slightly off skew a little bit in terms of that progression, but certainly for a long time it felt quite neat and tidy, if there wasn't some kind of hard times along the way. And for those people who are looking to go after a coaching career, it's not for the faint-hearted, and that's not to scare people or be negative or anything like that, but you have to, you know, there's many, many bends in the road and so on. The Africa Tanzania thing came about really, really out of the blue. It was not something I was pursuing. It's not something I'd even thought about. I was married less than 6 months by the time it raised its head. There's a very good sharer on Twitter, an ex-colleague of mine called Tony Mee. I think most people kind of in our circle, our coaching circle on Twitter and around that will know Tony and some of the stuff he does. I spent a year working with Tony quite a long time ago now. And I got a message from him one night. I was sitting down, I think we were sitting down to me and my wife to watch something on TV. And he said, I've been speaking to a guy, he's recruiting for a position in Tanzania. They're looking for a coach of a certain qualification. They're looking for a coach educator. Do you want me to connect you guys? And I thought, absolutely not. have you had too much to drink? Kind of attitude. Google where Tanzania was, and all that kind of I don't know, that's when we let it sink in, and it just, the more we looked at it and the more we spoke about it and the more I found out about it, the more you kind of thought, God, this isn't going to happen a second time. You know, this offer isn't going to be around forever. So we took the plunge, and it really was a really quick turnaround time between passports, flights and visas and settling contracts and all that. To being out in the middle of Dar es Salaam, which is, a tough third world city with some beautiful spots and some great people. But this, this constant kind of, you saw the best of it and the worst of it every day. But a fantastic experience, and probably exactly what I needed to take my head out of the Premier League and take my head out of English football being the kind of be all and end all. The levels of the boys out there was literally outstanding, and probably the best players I've worked with that we'll never know in any sort of famous sort of way. But that's kind of, that all goes in the pot when you're running a football program in terms of where they can go and what level they can play at. But a wonderful experience for me, brilliant life lessons. It really whets the appetite to go elsewhere, to use football to, not just for me to travel, but to experience those different football cultures as well as coaching cultures. So it's something that I will certainly do again, for sure.
We always tell players to get out of their comfort zone, and so often coaching, as you rightly say, is not for the faint of heart. It is a daunting, it's an adventure without a compass in many ways, and it's usually a faulty map that's desperately off the mark from where you planned. And I think that's generally where you find and you unearth some of the great friends that you meet in the coaching community, as you've mentioned and whatnot. And I think that, you know, your adventure, taking you to Africa, that probably did more for you in terms of expanding your learning set and your ability to see the world through, I guess, the coaching lens, but also through a life lens. What would you say is next on the horizon for you, other than this, this 7-week program, which, before we get into what's next on the horizon, how do people access your development program? Is it on your Twitter, or is it somewhere where they
it's splattered all over my Twitter right now. It's become pretty popular over the last couple of weeks since we opened booking, so you can find the link to book on through my Twitter. We're kind of running into the last I had to extend the number of places available, and we're kind of running towards the end of that as well. So I'd encourage people to get on there. If they check @power_Ray on Twitter, if they want to go straight to the event site, which is Eventbrite, Eventbrite, and search for coach development program, they'll find it pretty quickly. It's less than £40 for 7 weeks. There's no hidden anything else. It's just what it is to access the whole lot. That's probably the quickest way to get there.
Brilliant. And for you personally, do you have any books in the works, or are you working on anything that other than the football program? Because I know we are in times. I think time is the one thing we always wanted, and now it's all we have.
Yeah, true. it was probably that I always say writing a book is a little bit like getting a tattoo, because you get one and you want another, and you're always thinking about the next one. And maybe that analogy might be lost on a few people, but it might make perfect sense to others. I'm doing a fifth edition right now, and it's early days. I've obviously just released Coaching Youth Football, which is sold really, really well over the last sort of 5 or 6 weeks. But the next one is a fifth book in the Deliberate Soccer Practice series, which will be based around positional play and rondos. And also, more than likely, probably be 2021 now, that I'll be linking in with a very good goalkeeper coach to do a goalkeeper goalkeeping edition of that as well. And it's, you know, it's quite funny because I always wanted to write a book, but I never thought I would write multiple ones and kind of always have a book on the go kind of thing. I do consider myself an on-the-grass coach rather than a dare I say, a laptop coach. But it's quite funny where the journey takes you, and there's a certain addictiveness involved in going down the rabbit holes that we spoke about before that I really, really quite enjoy.
No, that's brilliant. I am envious of your ability to churn out books. If I'm getting a tattoo with my first book, it's a full back piece or a sleeve or something, because it's taken me quite a while, but it'll be worthwhile, I know, in the end. And I'm enjoying this this process. It's allowed me to see who I was 6-7 years ago when I started, how my ideas are either still withstand the test of time or they were not evergreen ever to begin with. And it's been very healthy for me, you know, to look at this through a different lens and an older lens now. Ray, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I think that anyone who wants to get in contact with you, they must know about you on social media. And I encourage listeners to look up the Football Coach Development Program. It runs from 30th May to 11th of July, and go to eventbrite.co.uk for more information on that. And without any more time, Ray, I really hope you enjoy the rest of your evening, and we'll be in touch shortly, I'm sure.
Brilliant, John. Thanks for having me on, and love the wider platform as well that you guys run. It's really, really good stuff.
Well, thank you so much. We'll talk soon, okay?
Cheers, Sean. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Coaches Forum by These Football Times. Be sure to check out These Football Times online for some of the best long-form, authentic journalism and football storytelling on offer.